There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon.
If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, or even contribute to the discussion in the episode itself, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow. Okay, help me. Let's workshop a joke. This is a redux episode, meaning it's we're redoing.
We've done it,
and it's a
but
it's
from a different angle.
And so it's we've gone back in time.
The power of love.
The power. We're going back to. There's got to be like a line of dialogue that. Wait, Richard, we already did this franchise, Back to the Future. And then you say, that's right, AJ, but we're back. We're back from the future
that's
to do
heavy.
Back to the Future again. Great, Scott. Da, 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 da. Welcome along, everyone, to Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cult Pop Show podcast. We watch a different film franchise every fortnight. I'm AJ and that's Richard, but this fortnight we are doing our annual redux. We revisit a franchise from Fortnights past.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the earliest we've ever gone back.
Mm.
This is the
1885 of it.
Yeah, totally. Because this fortnight, you guys voted, or our patrons voted, on the Back to the Future trilogy. When did we do Back to the Future?
Back to the Future was what, our like fifth or sixth episode of the show. I've got the planning document open here, actually.
Tell me.
So our first franchises were Lethal Weapon, Ace Ventura, Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Night, Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. The Mummy, Universal, Evil Dead, SpongeBob, Back to the Future. So it was our eighth franchise.
So, and it also wasn't our earliest because we reduxed
the Mummy.
Mummy.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah,
I
so
guess, like,
we...
It's more special, though,
yeah,
that
yeah,
we're doing.
We like this one more, but it's a lot easier to do than The Mummy as well. But we, and then immediately after Back to the Future, we did Spider-Man as well, which was our first redux. So... And then a few weeks after that was Freddy vs. Jason, which we've also reduxed. Anyway,
I wasn't thinking very fourth dimensionally.
Yeah. I got a real problem with that. Also, the funny sort of like thing that we've done with this, with the original
the funny
thing
we've done.
The funny thing, like the reason to redux is that In September 2016, when we covered this franchise, we split it into 3 episodes because we were like, this episode is too long. It was about an hour and a half record, and Rowan guest starred on it. And so we're redoing it to do it as one episode without Rowan, as God intended.
And also, we say this every redux, but this is not... I haven't re-listened to the old episode.
It's not a sequel to the episode. It's a remake of the episode.
It is taking the place of the old episode. So please don't get all like...
They're repeating
what about
that.
You said that already, because this franchise obviously meant a lot to us then and it still means a lot to us now. Oh, look at us. We're so original. Back to the Future means a lot to me. Oh, my God. Mm. So, you know, similar things shall be said.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Back to the Future. The
Back to the Future
trilogy. Back to the Future. And that conversation will be in our future. So that's the Back to the Future.
Wow.
I don't know if that one worked. I'm trying.
You could do a podcast where you watch... All you do is watch Back to the Future twice in a row. Mm. And it's called Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. That's good. It's good, Richard. So, this is one of these franchises that when you're trying to like make your name, and we're 7 years later, we're still trying to make our name as a podcast. It's like you know, there are probably hundreds of podcasts covering the Back to the Future series out there. And so I wanted to try and refocus the usual Popturian conversation here to be not so much like, so when Marty first arrives at the mall, it's got a sign that says Twin Pines Mall. But then after he goes back in time,
the thing about, like, there's so many, like, what you're describing is like a great little Easter egg, but it's one that everyone knows. But the other thing, and I hope this isn't where you were leading, but the Back to the Future is like the favorite film of pedants. That people love to point out, like, actually, you know, the grandfather paradox states, or like, you know, Marty, and or like these fan theories are like, well, Back to the Future has a real dark twist because Doc makes them stand in front of it. He was willing to kill himself. And it's like all these things. People love to look into like all these little things. Oh, you know, the fact that the 1885 ancestors are played by the same people means the whole family is incestuous. It's like, no, these are fun little visual connectivity things.
Yes. Yeah. So I think it's the series directed by Robert Zemeckis, produced by Steven Spielberg, starring written by Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd as Marty McFly and Doc Brown, came out in 1985. Then the sequel, the sequels were filmed back to back, I believe, Back to the Back to the Future came out, and that's probably what they said on set 35 years ago when they made that. So yeah, the second two were made back to back, and they came out in 1989 and 90, right? And they're like 6 months apart.
Oh yeah,
I remember hearing.
I like how unconfident you said that when that is
the easiest thing to
verify.
It is 1989.
Yeah, it's November and May, so yeah, just over 6 months apart.
Don't like that. I think, and if I were alive at the time, I would have been like, oh, I could have used a little more time to sit on the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they follow the adventures of 17-year-old Marty McFly as he goes back to the future and nearly fucks his mum. And there's actually quite a lot of similarities between this and our previous franchise, The Karate Kid, that we did last fortnight, in that the one that just sprang to mind.
Main character tries to fuck his mum.
The one that just sprang to mind then is that if you watch the trilogy in one go, it's like a non-stop. Like, for Marty, it doesn't stop. It keeps going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was sort of the case for Mr. Miyagi and what's his name?
Daniel LaRusso. Which you were so proud of yourself last week that you remembered that name.
Couldn't give a shit about it now. I mean, both quintessential 80s franchises, both about the friendship between a teenager and an older man. But God damn, do I care more about Back to the Future than I do about any 80s movie. Absolutely. And I don't know why. Whenever I watch an 80s movie now, even if it's one I've seen, if it's one I haven't seen, whatever, I always feel there is a bit of like a disconnect. Even if I like the film, it's like this was made for people.
I wasn't born, so why do I care?
Why would I care? No, like, I don't know. Like, there's a very, like, the 80s is a very specific sense.
Yeah,
like,
only 80s kids.
Like, 80s movies. Only 80s kids get it truly, I believe. But that doesn't seem to apply to Back to the Future. I think Back to the Future might be like the only 80s movie I would genuinely say is like one of my favorite movies.
Well, I think maybe could it potentially, like, the idea of like a family movie has changed a lot. Like, this is a film for the whole family. It has some,
especially you and your mum. Watch it with you and your mum. Yeah.
It has a very, like, has, you know, some more sort of adult themes, but now a family movie just means a kid's movie. This is like a full four quadrant movie in terms of who it appeals to. And I think a lot of other 80s movies have much more specific demographics than Back to the Future. So I think that that's not a super specific feeling that you're stating. It's like the actual appeal of the movie. It's an external thing as much as an internal thing.
But also, Richard, maybe it's because my parents didn't show me The Karate Kid when I was 7 years old.
Also true.
Hmm. So what is the first film, Back to the Future, 1985, about? Came out in 1985. It's, what do you think it has on Rotten Tomatoes? Directed by Robert Zemeckis.
94.
It has a 94 audience score. Hmm. Looking at it right now. Can you see it in the reflection of my blue light glasses? 97% it has on Rotto Tomatoes. Yeah, this is what the critical consensus say. I never have Rotten Tomatoes open. I just copy the scores, but now I have it open. Inventive, funny, and breathlessly constructed, Back to the Future is a rousing time travel adventure with an unforgettable spirit. Richard, tell us, what is Back to the Future about? I hate when we have to say what a movie everyone has seen is about. It feels like the most, like, trimmable part of the edit.
Well, please don't.
Okay, well, tell me. Make it interesting.
Well,
do it in an improvised haiku form.
Marty McFly.
This is going to take too long. Do a limerick.
there once was a guy named Marty whose time travel's pretty smarty. His friend was pretty smarty. He made a time machine and his peen.
Oh.
No, I'm not a big limerick guy. Anyway, so Marty McFly is your typical teenager, and he has a friend, Doc Brown, much older gentleman. Doc Brown builds a time machine out of a DMC DeLorean, and Marty inadvertently, accidentally ends up using this time machine to go back to the past, despite the film's title, and meets up with Doc Brown's 1955 counterpart, and has to get his help to repair the time machine to go back to the future. Meanwhile, Marty also inadvertently stopped his parents from meeting, because we're told their story of how they met at the start, and Marty stops that from happening. So then, while he spends a week in 1955 waiting for the time machine to be repaired, or for waiting for a lightning bolt to power the time machine, he also has to play matchmaker and get his parents back, or get them to meet and fall in love, so that he can be born in several years' time. And the film ends with him succeeding in his mission.
There's also a bad guy named Biff. There you go.
Like his dad's boss in the present day and his high school bully in 1955.
This is a series that gets weird when you start thinking about a lot of the, like, how relationships developed in the in the parts of the timeline we don't see.
So how your mom for me.
What do you think of Back to the Future?
Oh, big question. I'll start with my history of Back to the Future. So when I was a little boy, I must have been about 8 or 9, I think, and it was on TV one night, and sat down to watch it, and just, like, instantly fell in love. Like, the first film that I, like, truly, truly was, like, enamored with. And not, like, there's, like, a kid's way that's like, oh, mom, let's put on a Toy Story again, because it's, like, it's bright colors and you love the music and shit like that. Mm-hmm. It's like Back to the Future was like, holy shit, my mind's eye has been opened in terms of what a film can be and what a film can achieve. And my parents were always like, oh, you know, we always knew once you got to a certain age, we had to show you Back to the Future because we knew you were going to love it. And for weeks afterwards, being like, mom, dad, can we get out the second, finding out there was a second one and being like, we need to get it out from the video store. And we didn't for so long. And I remember, this is so strange, Back to the Future played on TV on like a Friday night. And then 2 months later, they played Back to the Future 3 on a Friday night. And they just didn't play 2 in the middle of that. And I remember being like, you know, so in love with this film. We hadn't got the second one out. So I had no idea what happened. And this was before the days of the internet, really. And And so the third one was on one night, and my parents were like, no, you got to watch the second one first. And then I was like, I'm sure I'll pick it up. The third film opens with the ending of the first film. He goes, yes, Doc Brown's still in 1955. He's celebrating I sent Marty back to the future. And then Marty comes running back into frame, and he's like, I just sent you back to the future. And he's like, well, I'm back. I'm back from the future. And then Doc faints, cut to title. That was the most mind-blowing piece of pop culture I've ever experienced, watching it like right. that. Like,
yeah, right.
Having no idea what happens in the second one, and then, holy shit, he's back. What the fuck has happened in two that leads to this? And it's like I don't think I've ever had such a mind-blowing twist happen to me in all of my years of consuming pop culture since then. And
so did you stop watching and then watch two, or did you watch three before two?
No, I was like, I can't watch this after that. Like, I think my parents might have been like, you know, you're don't watch this one. And then we got out two and three soon after that. But so I did. I watched one, two, and then three, but I saw this little tease of three first. And it's my experience with the first one. It's like one of the only films I've owned on VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray. And
I think I might.
Yeah, it's just, it's too. I would consider this the film that got me into film, really. What about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, pretty similar. Not right. Like, well, we both have a very specific experience we associate with part three. but no, I like, again, pretty similar. I think I just saw the first one on TV. I remember the house I was in. I remember where we were living.
Been the same screening, to be honest.
Yeah, that's probably true. I remember just feeling I wouldn't have articulated this at the time, but looking back, it's like, I wanted to be Marty McFly. Like, I wanted to grow up and become
inside him.
I remember looking at my mum. This is going to sound dodgy. I remember looking at my mum when it becomes clear that Marty's mum has a crush on him, and looking at my parents, not just my mum, but at both my parents for, like, clarification. Like, is this where the story is going? And because, you know, we take it for granted now, but it's a pretty fucked up thing to put in a family movie, you know? Like, it's a pretty uncomfortable truth that no one really, like, takes the time in the film to, like, psychoanalyze. Like,
yeah.
You know? But, like, that just adds this, like, spiciness to the movie, yeah. I think, that really helps it. I don't remember when exactly we got the second one, but we definitely rented it. And it was like, holy shit. Like, I remember this is quickly becoming not a movie by movie discussion and more of an overall. But I remember, like, at the end when he's climbing on the rafters above the previous version of him from the first movie playing Johnny B. Goode, I remember thinking, like, would you be able to see this if you rewatched the first one and you looked at the rafters? Like, and then we got out Back to the Future 3, Richard, when on one fateful day, I was on the trampoline.
Right.
I might have told this. I had to have told the story on the original episode. So
I thought you were going to say it was 9/11.
No. Well, maybe. It could have been. it would have been 2001. Like, it would have been. And my brother would always get on top of our garden shed from the trampoline. Mm-hmm. He's a couple of years older than me. And I would always be like, oh, help me get up. And he'd be like, no, you got to learn how to do it. And I tried to, like, climb up by jumping on the trampoline and, like, grabbing onto the ledge. but I fell. And the bottom
it's
of...
It's a very un-AJ story.
The bottom of the garden shed where it meets the grass, like, sort of, like, folds upwards so that there's a metal rim that's facing upwards at the bottom. And I sliced half my big toe off.
Wow.
Are
you missing part of your big toe now?
No, like the pad of my toe. Right. So not from the knuckle, but the
underside of it.
The the underside of it, sliced it off, and I remember just being so, you know, just crying so much. I think my parents had to very, very gently get like the bathroom scissors and like chop off the loose bit of like flesh that was still there. And I had to like walk around like holding my toe above ground for the next couple of weeks. But that night, Dad got out Back to the Future 3 because everyone felt sorry for me. So I watched it in a lot of pain. But yeah.
That's, so, I mean, that's if it wasn't for that, you might have never watched it.
Yeah, that's true. So I guess like I wanted to talk about, you know, we're talking a lot about our experiences here. And I think what makes this different from other Reduxes that we've done, I think anyway, is that this one is more significant in my life because, like you, I have watched these films. I've done like full sit-throughs of the whole trilogy in one day, multiple times. Like I also think I probably owned it on all the platforms. I remember getting a box set when I was a teenager and just watching it in my room. Then we watched it for the podcast in 2016. I remember I got the 35th anniversary Blu-ray for it, which came with the animated series, which I made a video on and we made a podcast on a number of years ago. And so, like, truly a fan. I've got a model DeLorean. All these are Christmas presents, basically.
Yeah.
But I have not rewatched the trilogy since we watched it for film franchise Fortnights last. Have you?
I've rewatched the first one. And I think it was in 2019 where I did my year of watching a movie every day. And right, it was like one of those days where it's like, oh, I don't really feel like you're watching anything. I can just have on Back to the Future and it won't affect me because it's like,
yeah,
it's already in my DNA. But
the reason I haven't rewatched it since is that I feel like I kind of have undergone quite a I feel very different about the movie. Well, not very.
Well, you're a lot less eatable these days.
Yeah, that's true. no, I guess like I. What am I trying to say? This is bad podcasting.
Well, I sort of know, even though you haven't really articulated it, what you're, because I'm the same, that I haven't had a big desire to rewatch these or anything, but I think my pop culture consuming habits have changed a lot, and partially because of COVID, that rewatching a comfort movie isn't something I do much anymore.
No, neither. Not at all. I don't remember the last time I actually... 3 days ago, I've chucked on Hercules because I was high and bored, but I didn't watch it all. Nice. But I remember on, not to dwell in the past too much, we want to be talking about the future, but when we originally covered Back to the Future, and it was actually, I feel like it was the first time I'd met Rowan in person as well, was us recording it. And I opened up a discussion with something like, what is your favorite Back to the Future film and why is it part two? And Rowan was like, oh, like, that's a weird thing to say. And in my head, I was like, everyone loves part two best. What are you talking
Unless
about?
Unless you look at the Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah, well, we shall, because Rotten Tomatoes, Back to the Future part two has an abysmal 63% on Crazy. Rotten Tomatoes, which is so much lower than I ever would have thought, with Back to the Future part three on 80%. I was so shocked to learn that. I was so shocked to learn that not everyone had the same affinity for the second one as I did. But then somewhere, and I've talked about this before, but somewhere between 2016 and now, I totally have fallen off the sequels. At least as much as I used to be all about part two.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, part one, so clearly the best. Part two is a movie that has aged so poorly but so well at the same time. I think it's very attractive when you're a kid and you're seeing what the future would look like.
That I mean, if this is just going to be a free-form discussion now, but like...
Sorry, everyone who wanted a pure episode. There will never be a pure Back to the Future film franchise.
This is we're doing season one vibes. But growing up, I was like, yeah, basically, two's my favorite. Like, even then, I probably would have had that sort of thought of like, one's the best, but two's my favorite. And I think, yeah, like you said, the future stuff is so exciting. And then watching it again this time, there was a part of me that was like, let's just get through this stuff. Like, the future stuff is so the least important stuff in that film to me now. And the idea of, and you know, being the franchise podcast, that a sequel, which is the first film from a different angle, is the most exciting thing about that film. That running around just outside of frame for all of the first film is the best idea the second film has. Also, the stuff of being in an alternate version of the timeline we're aware of. Like, those are so much more interesting than the future stuff. Mm. And you can even tell, and this is, they've said this sort of in interviews and stuff, but, you know, when they realized, oh, we actually want to make a sequel... part of them was like, I wish we hadn't ended the first film the way we did with, you know, especially putting Jennifer in the car and flying off into the sunset, literally flying. Mm. Yeah, I mean, the alternate angle stuff is like all-time great sequel stuff.
I 100% agree, and watching it now without the like blind fervor I must have had the last time I watched part two, I think that first act is so tedious. Mm. And if I'd never seen these movies before and I was watching it for the first time for the podcast, that first act would make me go like, oh my God. Yeah. Because and like, it has gotten like quantifiably worse in the years since we passed 2015 in real life. Yeah. Like, you know, like, and
Diana. She died in a car accident. Yeah, there's one of the headlines is like Queen Diana.
Oh my God. Yeah, and they go into my favorite like, that didn't turn out how you thought it was, is when he goes into Cafe 80s and Michael Jackson is like an automatic Michael Jackson is delivering drinks.
Although I will say that is actually one of the things that has aged the best, even just in the last week, that resurrecting dead celebrities with That's AI true. To show you stuff. I was like, yeah. This is more relevant this week than it has ever been.
Maybe, but...
Yeah, but interestingly, yeah. I you haven't seen The Flash, I don't think, but that has a big part of that is Back to the Future as well. That Barry Allen ends up in an alternate timeline, and the first sort of one of the first hints he gets that is like, oh, everything's different here, as they keep talking about how great Eric Stoltz is in Back to the Future.
Ah, right.
And then he's like, wait a minute, and then he has this big argument about who played
what a
Marty
deep
McFly.
Cut thing to say in a.
Well, so I thought that as well, but the whole time I was like, when they started doing that, I was like, oh, of course, this is Warner Brothers Universal. They're gonna fucking play the Eric Stoltz footage that was in a vault for 30 years. It's not in the film, but I thought, oh, that would have been like, again, one of these things that's like, if you're going whole hog, it's like, yeah, fucking ruin you know, like, do it.
I think it's more so like, especially in 2015, I don't think Michael Jackson would have been in, you know, check out our Michael Jackson delivering drinks. It also kind of vaguely implies he would still be alive as well. He died before, he died in 2010. So
yeah, well, no,
that's,
I mean,
that's kind of
the way it
as well.
Is. Because also with when did Reagan die?
I guess Cafe 80s could have been around for a number of years by this point and just have pre-recorded footage of Michael Jackson. But Richard...
Reagan died in 2004 before anyone goes, oh, you didn't finish that thought.
Let's do the fun thing that everybody likes to do with time travel stories. Does the events of Back to the Future somehow alter from our timeline and split off into a timeline where Michael Jackson was never convicted of molesting children and was still a celebrated pop star in 2015, celebrated in 2015?
To be fair, he was never convicted of molesting children.
Did I say convicted? Yeah. Accused. Allegedly. Yeah,
I mean, maybe. When Marvin made that phone call, Maybe that altered music history.
When a white man stole rock and roll from a black man.
Yeah.
Retroactively.
There's a famous John Mulaney bit, which has not only changed, I think, the way people see Back to the Future, but the way people see film criticism, is that he does a bit, I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like, oh, imagine how crazy pitching Back to the Future must have been. And it's like, you know, you have these two guys and they go in and it's like, oh, he's, you know, hangs around with this old man. And it's like, oh, okay, what's their relationship? We never explain it. Okay, so this Marty McFly guy, is he like a cool guy? And they're like, nah. And then, okay, so he has this time machine, right? And then he goes back in time to like, ah, he goes to stop Adolf Hitler. And they're like, well, now what we are going to say is going to sound stupid. Like, okay, well, what are you going to say? And they're like, we thought it'd be funny if he tried to fuck his mom. And it's a very good bit. But like that bit, the guy that makes the pitch meeting YouTube videos has said he directly is just doing that John Mulaney bit, that he saw that and thought, oh, that's a funny idea, and then made this whole series about it. And the whole fucking cinema sins, honest trailers, like world of film criticism is like fucking bigger than ever, that people go, oh, well, this film's bad because it says Twin Pine at the start and now it says Lone Pine.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But yeah, it's, It's. I get that it's a fun movie to talk about like that, but it's like, this isn't, you're not actually critiquing the film, you're not actually having intelligent observations about the film. These are the first thing everyone thinks of when you bring up Back to the Future. The points I remember making in the first podcast, but it still rings true, is that like, Back to the Future is a perfect film. It's not a flawless film. It's like, it's not without imperfections, but it is a perfect film. And that it's like, you can nitpick it. There are continuity errors. There are plot holes. There are time travel always results in plot holes. This film is just firing on all cylinders. And I remember talking about how like, those imperfections, those little nitpicks you can have about this film are what make it human. There's nothing film ruining in there, but much like humans are imperfect, this movie is imperfect in the most perfect way, and it's greatest film ever made.
You reckon?
There's an argument to be made for that. I think that, because it's like, is the greatest film ever made going to be an incredibly highbrow piece of art that is, you know, Schindler's List. That's like,
as someone who edits the Letterboxd Four Favorites videos, I'd never heard someone say Schindler's List. I was ready for the Godfather. Or Shawshank.
Like, I was just thinking of like a film that's, I was trying to think of a film that's like good but not fun, and that's just certainly a Schindler's List. But that, like, yeah, I mean, The Godfather's a great example as well. That it's like, that's not, it's not super accessible to, like, you couldn't chuck anyone from any of the four quadrants in front of The Godfather and expect them to love it.
Yes, you could. It's probably a one quadrant movie, to be perfectly honest.
And whereas Back to the Future, that it's like. And it's the same thing, like your big issue with Paddington 2 shouldn't be the highest rated film on Letterboxd, on Rotten Tomatoes, sorry. That it's like, and I think, yeah, it fucking should be. Like, I mean, well, it should be Back to the Future, really, but like Paddington 2...
You're confusing your messaging here.
Yeah, but like, so a film like Paddington 2 should be the highest rated film on Rotten Tomatoes, because it's not saying this is the greatest film of all time. This is the most likable film of all time. I cannot imagine the person who doesn't like Paddington 2. I mean, I'm talking to him on a Zoom call, but
I don't not like it.
Oh, well, you're its fucking the world's leading expert in hating Paddington 2. And you don't even dislike it. So what does that fucking tell you, AJ?
I want to we're doing something a little different this episode, as you, as people will probably be able to tell if you've listened to other episodes. But I want to, like, I'm sick of, I don't want to just relay, as we said at the start, the same things that, that you've always heard.
Can we do it? I was going to suggest a game we could play.
I've got the game.
Oh.
I was also going to suggest a game.
Well, let's see if it's the same game.
So you issued me a challenge. Mm-hmm. Last week, I think you mentioned it on the Meeting of the Elders episode, but you also mentioned it in real life, Richard. And that is, you basically said, AJ, I'm the big cheese. I know more about Back to the Future than you. I know more about Back to the Future than any than MF anybody. On the whole GD world.
I reckon I know more about it than Robert Zemeckis. Certainly more than Bob Gale.
So you were like, I dare you, AJ, I dare you to teach me something I didn't already know about Back to the Future. And I thought to myself, one, that's probably not going to be that hard. I could be like, what was the actor that played this character in the background of the scene? And I know that's not what you meant, but yeah. I could do that and it would technically qualify for the parameters of the challenge. Mm. But also, what better way to shirk the responsibility of going through all the stuff you have to mention in when you talk about Back to the Future than see if you know it and have you say it.
Okay,
Richard. So my first question then would be,
who's this extra in the background?
A segment which I think we should abandon because it's becoming increasingly clear that it's not that interesting as we thought it maybe once was, and that is French-wise. Can you tell me why did Back to the Future spawn a trilogy?
Money.
Money. It's money. It's just always money. If it's not money, we'll bring it up. But yeah, it always is money.
Yeah.
It just made a lot of money. And they were like, yep, they always say that, you know, the cliffhanger at the end of the first film was not intended to be promising a sequel, but then it made heaps of money and a lot of people loved it. You mentioned the Eric Stoltz thing before. What does that mean? Let me pose it at each of these things as a question.
Okay.
Richard, did you know that Michael J. Fox was not always cast as Marty McFly?
Wait, really?
Yeah.
All right, end of the game. Now, so Eric Stoltz was originally... Well, Michael J. Fox was the first choice. He was unavailable due to filming Family Ties. And then Eric Stoltz was cast instead. Apparently, he just, like, wasn't funny. Like, he wasn't really that funny as one of
They say he misinterpreted the material and was way too dramatic and serious with it.
Yeah. But they shot with him for a couple of weeks. And then Michael J. Fox was able to make a schedule work. I believe he was going between, like, shooting Family Ties during the day and Back to the Future at night, vice versa. And... there is still one shot of Eric Stoltz in the film. Do you know what shot it is?
Yeah, it's when it's around the scene where Biff is confronting Biff in the diner, right?
No.
Or is it the cafeteria?
No, it's the shot of Marty jumping into the DeLorean when the Libyans arrive. Is Eric Stoltz?
Okay,
the shot you're thinking of is that the Eric Stoltz footage was in a vault for 30 years. I believe either in 2015 or 2020 when they did the 30th or 35th anniversary Blu-ray, they made some of the Eric Stoltz footage available for the first time. And there's the famous shot of him realizing, oh my God, I'm sitting next to my father, is one of the shots they released. I think that might be what you think of. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? You know more about it than me, clearly. Yeah, I didn't write a lot of these down.
just go for it.
Well, I don't know. So, why does Crispin Glover, who played George McFly, Marty's father in the first film, why does he have bad blood with the series now?
This is actually a fascinating thing, and again, like, still relevant today. So Crispin Glover declined to return for the sequels. They couldn't agree on pay. Apparently, it was like he wanted. It's come
equal?
Out just equal pay with like Marty and shit, like, because I mean he is a very main character in the first one. I mean he might have been more in the second and third if they hadn't, but in the second and third you'll notice that George McFly going from being a main character in the first one is always in the background wearing sunglasses or upside down. And the reason is that because he declined to return, but they used these tricks to make you think that Crispin Glover was still in the film. And there was this big court case, this big landmark sort of case about actors giving the permission of their likeness despite not being in the film and all the stuff. And so that's like, you know, the discussions that we're having now with AI and deep fakes and everything is all going to date back to this Crispin Glover case.
Yeah, right. Nice. There you go. What, which actor, Richard, whom you've previously mistaken as being in a movie, is in this movie but was not in the movie that you thought it was him in?
That's in the
Shall
first
I re- one. Do you want me to reword the question?
Yeah.
I think he's in the first two. There is an actor in Back to the Future 1 and 2. You're not allowed to look. It looks like you're looking this up.
I'm not.
There is an actor who's in, I think, the first two films. I don't think he's in the third film.
Oh, yeah. I know.
It's a background character. And we once watched a franchise and staggered to find it. For Redux, yeah. Okay, so you know it.
Yeah.
So you once thought who's the actor?
I was insane to me to find out that Billy Zane is not in The Mummy, but he is one
not
of
playing Imhotep.
He's one of Biff's cronies.
He's one of Biff's cronies, yeah. And I had the opposite experience watching it this time.
You're like, I thought that was. I just didn't think it was anyone, but then he looked.
He looked to the camera in a certain way, and I was like, "Is that Billy Zane?" Mm. And I was like, "It's not Billy Zane. He plays a character called Match, one of Biff's cronies, as you say."
Do you know the other actor who's in the second one, who is now a known
who?
Actor?
Oh, yes, yep. I do.
Who is it?
Elijah Wood.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay, Richard. There is an actor who is in some of these films who was in the last franchise we watched, and the roles they play are very similar, and the presence they have in the franchise is not dissimilar from each other.
Yes,
do you know what
this is
talking about?
This, because this is a fun realization that I had when I watched The Karate Kid. Did not identify that the love interest was second Jennifer. Yeah, Elizabeth Shue, who plays.
Correct.
I think I was, because when I watched The Karate Kid and we were saying Elizabeth Shue, I was thinking, who's the woman from Dirty Dancing who got her nose done and looked real different? That and ruined her career by getting a nose job. That was Jennifer Grey. And so in my mind, I was thinking of her. And I never, I guess I didn't recognize her. But it was fun. Watching it this time was the biggest, the most I've noticed the difference between Claudia Wells and Elizabeth Shue, I think.
Mm. Yep, so Claudia Wells plays Marty's girlfriend Jennifer in the first film. She did not return for the second two, where she was replaced with Elizabeth Shue, which I thought was
to her ailing father or something. Or mother.
Correct. And I thought that was an interesting parallel with her being in the first Karate Kid, Elizabeth Shue, and then not reprising her role for the second Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Maybe she was filming Back to the Future Part 2.
Maybe.
Yeah, okay. So those are a couple of the big ones I thought I could maybe not really get you with, but have you explain
to go
for
over,
me.
Yeah.
Yep, there is, but there's a couple of things I thought maybe I could get you with them, and I don't know if you'll be very satisfied with the way I've constructed okay. these questions, but I did genuinely try to take on the challenge.
Yeah.
My first question is, do you know how old Michael J. Fox is in each film? Because I found this interesting, but I didn't know if you'd know it.
Yeah, I wouldn't know exactly, but I would say he's...
You do have a penchant for accurately guessing random numbers on the scale, so...
I would guess he'd be 26, something?
In which film?
In the first one, sir.
Yeah. No. Does this count as me getting you?
I mean, it's not within the spirit of the game, but I'll allow it. Okay. How old is he?
He was 23 in part one, and then they filmed part two and three when he was 28.
Oh.
playing a 17-year-old. So similar to last franchise as well, we have someone who's 10 years older, basically, than the character they are playing.
Yeah.
But he is quite baby-faced. Do you know when he announced his Parkinson's diagnosis?
Yeah, it was like mid to like 2000s.
No, incorrect.
Oh, yeah. Early 2000s.
It was only 7 years after part three in 1998. Wow.
Do you know about how, I think we've spoken about this before, but that there's like a film that Michael J. Fox worked on, because we don't know what causes Parkinson's. We know very little about it. But there's a film that he's in where like, it's like three or four cast members, I think it's like four cast members or crew members or whatever, got Parkinson's, and they were filming somewhere weird, but it's like you need five cases to be considered a cluster, so they've never investigated it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You've just told me something interesting I didn't know about.
Yeah.
That's such a red flag. Would you not, if you were Michael J. Fox with like your foundation and your wealth and stuff, would you not investigate that? Yeah. Would you not?
Crazy, yeah.
That's crazy.
Did you watch the Michael J. Fox show?
No, I remember reading the concept and being like, that sounds so great. What a perfect vehicle for a, you know, Michael J. Fox was to like, still keep acting. But
yeah, I
saw the trailer and didn't think it looked very
good. Yeah, I watched a few episodes. It looked very good. But yeah, that it's like this, because it's one of those classic, like the old school idea of a sitcom where it's like, it's the Michael J. Fox show. He's not playing Michael J. Fox. The character isn't even named Michael J. Fox. But he was like a news anchor who went off the air and is now coming back. And it's like, there was the bit in the first episode where it's like, he's triumphantly returning. And he's like, why is this, what's with the fucking inspirational music? Like, but his wife was played by Betsy Brandt.
Betsy Brandt? Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It was like her first big post-Breaking Bad role.
Hmm. Mm, mm. So do we keep going with the game, or do we want to talk about,
well, if you've
got
stuff written down, like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, okay, so this is my last Hail Mary to try and get you. Yeah. So this is the last thing, but it is quite specific. But that's what you want, right? Yeah. You said to me you've watched every DVD commentary, every behind the scenes featurette, right? Mm-hmm. Do you know, and this is a multi-part question, do you know how 9/11 affected Back to the Future?
You might not know. I mean, I might have heard it when you say it, but no, that's a good question.
Right, so, and I'm not talking about that really, really fucking funny YouTube video where someone says that Back to the Future 2 predicts 9/11, right? Because when they're changing the future TV screen, it clips onto the Twin Towers and a ripple goes down the screen, and from an upside down George McFly's perspective, he would have seen the towers fall down. I think that's so funny. That's not what I'm talking about. No, so there is seemingly, and maybe I'm making this a bigger thing than it actually is, but the Back to the Future various wikis seem to like talk about it quite a bit. There is like a legendary 1998 airing of Back to the Future on NBC.
Oh, yeah.
November 13th, 1988, in which certain minor scenes were censored.
Oh, yeah.
And after 2001, after September 11th, more cuts were made for the edited for television version, is this notorious version of Back to
the
Future.
This is what happens when you find a stranger in the Alps.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought this would be a good place to start to try and tell you stuff you didn't know, because this is something I've read before, and I researched, I looked it up again because I was like, this is a little trickle in the back of my brain that I remember that maybe Richard doesn't know about. So I've got a list here of lines that were changed for the American release on pretty much any time it was played on television post 9/11 or from the November 13th 1998 cut. Shall I go through all of these on the wiki and you try and guess what the old line is?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay, at one point, a radio spokesperson says, Statler Toyota is making the best deals of the year on all 1985 model Toyotas. What has that changed to in the TV cut?
Wait, I'm guessing what the edit is.
Yes, what's the edit?
Oh, fuck. pass. I thought we were going the other way, that you were going to give
me. Oh, do you want to go the other way? We can do that as well. The word Toyota is cut from the any time it's said for some reason.
Right.
But it is not blurred when you see Toyotas in the film. Okay, let me see what's the...
I don't know, which way is going to be more fun?
Okay, no, this is just a line that was cut out of... The film. But I'll tell you this one for free because this is the most pertinent to the 9/11 connection. Yeah. Is the television at the start of the film. It's the first line you hear. The first lines you hear in the film says, "A Libyan terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the alleged theft. However, officials now attribute the discrepancy to a simple clerical error." That and any mention of the word terrorist, 9/11 actually changed how we see, before 9/11 the word terrorist was not
all
as
over the film.
Inherently well no but it wasn't as inherently all the things we associate with it now. You could speak about a terrorist in a positive context. You could say a revolutionary was a terrorist, in Abe's Exodus, one of my favorite video games, which came out in 1999. You are referred to as a terrorist in the game because you're going
terrorizing.
Up against the establishment. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What is this line? This is the changed line. Okay. I want you to tell me what the original line is. Marty says, "Geez, I'm starting to sound like my old man."
Is it "Christ, I'm starting to sound like my old man"?
Close. It's "Jesus, I'm starting to sound like my old man." Jennifer's grandmother's phone number. She writes her phone number on the back of the Save the Clock Tower note. In the film we have watched, it says 555-4823. What does it say in the edited version?
555-9/11.
Imagine that.
They changed it to 9/11.
They changed it to 9/11. No, and this would have been so distracting if you watched it on TV and this was the first time you saw it. It says 555-0123. I don't know why you would change that. Mm. It's so weird.
There's a bunch of examples, not from this film, but of other films where there's a phone number just in a scene and it turns out to be someone's real number and yada, yada, yada. But 555 isn't a real number. That's the area code reserved for fake numbers.
Mm. Yeah. When Dave McFly, Marty's brother, who's not really a presence in the film, realizes he's late for work, in the original film, he says, "God damn it, I'm late." What does he say in this?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Censored vision. This is such a boring game.
He says...
It's just, damn it, I'm late. I'll look for something more interesting.
Yeah, I'm late for my flight to the Twin Towers.
Okay, what is the? This is a classic line as well. This is a classic Back to the Future line. What does this change to in the TV edit? The original version that we watched is from George McFly at the dinner table. He says, "What, Lorraine? What?" Do you remember that part?
I love that part.
For some reason.
One of my favorite idiosyncratic delivery. It's actually not Crispin Glover in the second film as well. In the second film when he's like, "Well, you're right. Well, you're right."
And you have given that to me, by the way. I don't know if you knew that, but I say that now.
Oh, because really?
You once, years ago, you were like, "I love that line in Back to the Future." And I was like, "I don't remember that line in Back to the Future." So I've just been copying you.
You're quoting me.
And then saw it in the film and I was like, it's slightly different in the film than how Richard quoted to me.
Yeah, but there's a few, because Crispin Glover is a weird fucking dude. What, Lorraine? What? And then it's laugh as well at the honeymooners. Is it honeymooners?
It's like Jared Leto's Joker.
Yeah.
So he goes,
"What, Lorraine? Fuck!"
In the censored version. You're pretty close here. They drop the last "what" for some reason. So it's just "what, Lorraine?" Okay, Lorraine, a line was taken out of, or some words were taken out of this line. The line is, anyway, this is from Lorraine, anyway, your grandpa hit him with the car and brought him into the house. He seemed so helpless, like a lost puppy, and my heart just went out to him. Which of those lines is removed?
He seemed like a lost puppy.
No.
That's the only line kept.
Actually, it cuts out, anyway, your grandpa hit him with the car and brought him into the house. A crucial setup in the film is removed from it. This is an easy one. This is a gimme. This line was changed for the censored version. The censored version is, if my calculations are correct, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious stuff.
The film, he says serious shit. You know, I just realized,
yep,
what I have, mm-hmm, this is a visual thing.
Nice.
I have a print of the Back to the Future poster right behind me this whole time.
Mm.
312 of 995. Fuck, it's a good poster.
Yeah, it is.
Drew Struzan.
Should we ditch the game and talk about something else? Okay. All right. Famous line in the actual film, Jesus Christ, Doc, you disintegrated Einstein. What is the line changed to in the...
Fuck, you explode the dog.
Fuck, you just hit the second tower. I like this joke that we've made where they've changed it to reference 9/11 and not to not reference.
Is it just like, oh gosh, gosh darn it, you disintegrated Einie.
So that sort of, you know, powder puff like swearing is, yeah, the right vibe. The line in the centered version is, geez Louise, Doc, you disintegrated Einstein. Which makes me wonder, where do they get these lines from? Do they just have a voice actor come in and say, geez Louise, instead of,
well, that's the thing,
Jesus
that, like,
Christ?
Michael J. Fox is a pretty famously imitable voice.
What about this one? When George, when Marty's giving George the rundown of, like, how to fight him to get Lorraine, he says, he's like, get your damn hands off me. And George says, do I really have to swear? And what does Marty say in the censored version?
No, you don't.
No, no one does. No, he says, so in the real version, he says, yes, definitely, God damn it, George, swear. In this one, he just says, damn it. And then once again, terrorists is removed from Marty's letter that he tries to give to Doc to warn him. And the one, the last line, the one that I actually remembered, and that's why I thought it would be a good option for this game, is at the end of the film, when Doc's like, Marty, Jennifer, you got to come to the future. It's about your future. Marty says, what happens to us in the future? Do we become like assholes or something? What do you think assholes has changed to?
Jerks.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
It's changed to jerks. There's also a small section on this wiki that... This is the censorship wiki, by the way, not the Back to the Future wiki, which is interesting. The UK censorship says, when it aired on ITV in United Kingdom on 9th of October in 2011, the scene in which Marty's girlfriend Jennifer gives him her grandmother's number was removed altogether. So there's something about this 555, which notoriously is like the movie number.
What's the rest of the number?
Like the, 4823. But, you know, I've heard it joked about that if a number starts with 555, it's a fake number and they're giving it to you for the movie.
The meaning of 4823. Angel number?
Is it?
If you see... If you see angel number 4823, the message relates to the field of money and work. This seems like...
This does not feel like it'd be wise.
Yeah, but so he doesn't get the flyer then, which is,
well,
because
she doesn't write her number on it. Maybe
she just writes "I love you."
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's interesting to me, and I think that, like, I think it's what you said before, that it's just displaying a phone number on TV is maybe a bad call.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's very peculiar. But anyway, does that count? Did I teach you something about Back
good.
To the Future?
Thank you very much.
That was good. All right. Okay. So, this is the first time in watching the series in which I will have ranked them the following way. Because as a kid, I would have always said, and as a teenager, and as a 23-year-old when we recorded, we're actually recording this on the last night of my
20s. Yeah. How do you feel?
Horrible.
Shitty.
but, so, I would have always gone 2-1-3.
Yeah.
Now I would go to, no, sorry, I'd go 1-3-2.
What the fucking heck?
It is the first time I have, like, enjoyed, I think this is the most I've enjoyed 3 in years, especially comparing it to the really, really rickety first half or first act of 2. Mm. 3 has a lot more care. I think a big thing about it is just how overexcited 2 gets with its set, with it, like, its art direction for the future, for 2015, and it just gets to the point where it's like, you guys had to have known the world wouldn't look like this in 2015. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I think we're, like, a lot more realistic with our future predictions these days.
Just end of the world.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think it's the first film which feels so authentic. The second film, not only are the old makeup, the elderly makeup is a lot worse for some reason in the second film.
Well, there's just so much more of it. I mean, that's true. Sorry, you're on a roll.
I was just going to say, like, the art direction is so extreme and so intense, and they're firing on all these different ideas, and very little of it came true. We do not have, like, a flying car traffic
system. We don't
have
a Queen Diana.
We don't have Jaws 19, though there was, of course, Richard.
A fun teaser that was made for it.
And, like, a film festival, right? That you can watch a bunch of Jaws 1. Apparently there's, like, Jaws 12 or something was made for this short film festival.
Okay.
Well, they made a bunch of Jaws, and Jaws 12 attempts to, like, bridge the gap between...
Yeah, there's they released a trailer that's, like, the first four Jaws. It's just, like, the title cards. It was like, and then he went to space, and then, and then he had his revenge, and now it's... Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas, like, the Old West stuff, not only does that feel more authentic because that's kind of like a more muted
reserved.
Well, yeah. But they hang a lampshade on the fact that Marty looks ridiculous in the costume he arrives in 1885 in. And so, I don't know, like, and I just found the story a lot more authentic. The one thing I'll still give, and we were talking about this before, the one thing I'll still give part two is, like, the whole stuff with retreading, like, going back to the end of the first film. I think, as you say, that is excellent, and that is a 10 out of 10 idea, and probably one of the more exciting parts of the franchise. But also, I think the Grey's Sports Almanac is, like, that is, to me, that's the, like, single best idea in the series. Like, the story engine, the plot device that is the almanac. I am surprised wasn't in the first film. They probably got...
The 2 and 3 are full of things that they're hoping you think was in the first film.
Yeah.
Like Marty being called chicken.
Yeah, exactly. Needles, a character who comes out of nowhere. What is
comes
up
out of
with
nowhere?
That?
Also, again, this is a visual
played
thing.
Played by Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
But, like, in the it's the most insane fucking performance. I'm going to do it for you, and
I can
kind of describe what I'm doing. But go back and watch the scene in the second film in 2015 where Needles has the phone call with Marty McFly, and he's telling him, look, are you in or you're out? And he calls him chicken, and then he's in, and it's, you know, some big scheme, and then he ends up getting fired for it. Mm-hmm. Once they've finished the call, Flea, Needles, just goes, he's like, thanks a lot, and then he goes like this. His eyes just, like, unfocus. He looks, like, up to the side in the distance, and then just smiles and just wiggles his head away from the camera. It's like... It cuts to a wider shot, so it's not the screen isn't the focus, but it's the weirdest fucking thing. I don't know why, like, maybe that's how they end phone calls in 2015.
Oh, it sounds like he's looking to the director for, you know, was that good?
Yeah, maybe, but it's so strange.
It's not the only time a character in the background of a shot does something fucking ominous that feels actually quite creepy directed off screen, because at the end of part 3 when Doc arrives and shows off his family, I was watching, my flatmate came home and was like, watching the end of it with me, and I was like, watch the little boy's hands, because he points at his wiener and then beckons someone from off screen. And it's, you know, people think he's like trying to tell someone that he needs to pee or something, but it made it into the film.
It's also like, because you know, I know that bit's coming, the reveal of Vern, the character's name, so he's like, Doc's introducing his kids, Jules and Vern. Mm-hmm. The reveal of Vern is like a jump scare. That kid is terrifying looking.
And isn't it interesting?
He's doing
as well,
like a Kubrick stare.
The thing is interesting as well that in the Back to the Future animated series, Jules and Vern are main characters, and they are somewhat modeled off those two little boys. And imagine having, because these kids will still be alive, they won't be that much older than us, like you know. And so there's some kid out there who in the 90s had a character based off his likeness, like lead two seasons of a cartoon.
His name is Daniel Evans.
There you go. Shout out to Daniel. Daniel? Just call him Daniel.
So apparently, as of 2016, he was a very down on his luck, not well-shaved, very short and sad man, delivering pizzas in Reno, Nevada with a team of 18-year-olds who had no idea what he was talking about.
Why is that information online?
I read it. Someone's like, yeah, I worked with him, and we didn't have any orders, and he was talking, and he's like, yeah, I was in Back to the Future 3, and it's one of the most embarrassing things of my life. And they showed him the clip.
Amazing.
But that's also anyway.
Well, we need to ask Daniel what the fuck's up with the hand.
I'm sure he's heard that all his life.
So we need to talk about, I've never seen anyone really talk about this, and I'm not saying I find her attractive, but Martina McFly, played by Michael J. Fox, Marty McFly's daughter, looks very authentic. And in a film which you really have to squint to believe
that this is
what a 62-year-old Michael J. Fox would actually look like. In a film where you have to do that, the way, like, it doesn't look like a man in drag. It looks like a girl. You know what I mean?
I mean, like, because you talked about, like, how the makeup looks worse in the second film. And it's like, there are bits and pieces that look good. But, like, the second film is, like, such a monumental leap forward for technology. In terms of, like, the programmable fucking cameras, movements and stuff like that. That was all, it was like one of the biggest leap forwards for technology in Ireland on Industrial Light and Magic history. Like the Captain Disillusion has a great video about the VFX of Back to the Future, and it's like there's stuff that's like, it's just mind-blowing. And I mean, because there's a lot of stuff in the whole series that has two people played by the same actor on screen together, and there are bits when you can very clearly see the masking and, you know, where one character's been cut out. But it's like, it's for the time, it's incredible.
I think the most obvious one is in part three, where Seamus McFly is walking back with Marty after he's just challenged Mad Dog Tannen to a duel. That's one I always see. You can so see that the Marty McFly, Michael J. Fox, is the one on the green screen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's really obvious.
Yeah. But there's a few, like and this is the Zemeckian touch. Like, there's the famous thing in, because he directed, I think it was the film he did after Back to the Future, was Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And there's all the stuff in that that's like, you know, you didn't need to go this hard. Like, having the light source swinging around and having the tunes interact with real items and things. And there's a lot of things in Back to the Future 2. You know, the old school way of doing this way, way back in the day was that you have a fence post in the middle of the screen. You have one character act out their scene. You cover half of the lens and, you know, the light isn't actually hitting the film stock. And then you reload that same film and then you play it out again. I'm talking like, you know, early 1900s. This is how they did it. And it's always, and you see this in sitcoms and shit as well, that it's like the easiest way to do it is literally just split it down the middle. And there's so many things in this with the two Jennifers are like,
they
when they
pass
see
by
each other. Yeah, and they cross each other, and it's crazy. It's so well done. And there's so much stuff like that that's like, I wouldn't have questioned it if these characters never crossed paths. But yeah, and then like when you've got like four characters played by Michael J. Fox all at the table together, and the camera's moving and there's stuff moving. I believe when they were shooting that, I think there was an earthquake and they had to start again because everything moved ever so slightly.
What the worst thing that could have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if to sort of clarify what you're meaning. The way they did this dinner table scene is I believe they got like a motorized, like, I don't know what you'd call it, like a piece of equipment that was on a programmed, crane that was on a programmed track. And so they acted the scene out and filmed it, and because it's automated, it would move it exactly the same way each time, so that then in the edit you could just crop where you need it.
Yeah, so I think it's like you move the camera organically once, and then the machine remembers that exact movement and just replicates it over and over again. Which is now like a fairly standard piece of technology in the industry, but it was pretty much invented for this.
Mm. Yeah, it's very cool. I remember you alluded to this before, that like the writers have said if we knew we were going to do a sequel, we wouldn't have put Jennifer in the DeLorean. Mm. And boy, is that painfully obvious, I think, watching it now. I think they genuinely just don't know what to do with her. She's left in a dumpster. It doesn't paint Doc and Marty in particular.
I mean, two hot cops show up.
For some reason, the cops are real hot.
Yeah, I messaged you there the other day. I seen your picture of the two hot cops, and I was like, I love that the vision for the future includes just cops are hot now. And you did not reply. You didn't react to it at all. And I was devastated. Do you know what it was? I was like, AJ's mad that I complimented police officers.
That's true.
So when they get to the future, they're like, oh, let's just pop Jennifer on this stack of laser discs. And we're just still around in 2015. And then they just leave her there, like, don't worry, she'll be fine, she's knocked out. But it's like, there's no reason why Doc wouldn't just leave her in the DeLorean when he goes and does his thing, because he goes to knock out Marty McFly Jr., so Marty McFly Sr., our regular Marty, can take his place. But because he used the knockout gas or knockout thing on Jennifer, there's not enough, blah, blah, blah. But
It's a good way. I can imagine being in the writer's room, being like, we did it. We solved it. We solved the reason that Jennifer needed to be in the car. But I don't think it's a good enough reason. And why wouldn't you just leave her in the DeLorean, I guess?
Yeah. Chuck her in the frunk.
And the reason why she's not left in the DeLorean is because older Biff has to take it. And you don't want her in there. I always thought it was interesting that, so older Biff, this is, a lot of this episode is us presuming you guys have seen the film, seen the films. But I always thought it was interesting that they explicitly show him like dying because he changed the past, older Biff.
Well, they don't explicitly show him dying.
Is that a deleted scene?
It's a deleted scene that shows him explicitly dying.
Well, he still gets out of the car, like clearly in pain.
Yeah. Right. Which is a weird thing to then cut the deleted scene because it's now like because he needs to be clutching his cane in a certain way that breaks it and leaves it in the DeLorean.
And but then that version of the character just disappears from the series, because Biff's not even in the third one.
Biff is in the third one. He's not 2015 Biff, but the 1985 one is right at the end. But he the way that they do time travel in Back to the Future is that, like, once he gave him the almanac, he should then travel back to alternate 2015.
Oh, is that that's a plot hole there?
Yeah, and this is like an actual plot hole, because it's not like the rules you've established of this, because they later on they say, well, let's go to 2015 and take it, not let Biff get the almanac. They go, no, we can't do that because we'll travel further into this one. The official explanation, and also like why does he die but then none of the other reality changes around him, is that, well, there's two things. One is that it's like, oh, the universe has like a ripple effect.
Yeah.
And so it's like it takes a while for things to catch up. The other one is that, like, the universe, the timeline has like kind of self-preservation sort of things. And so it's like the DeLorean needs to go back there for everything to happen. And I mean, as soon as you say, oh, the universe did it, you can fix any plot hole.
Sure. Yeah. I want to go back to Jennifer, though, and it is related to what we're sort of talking about here. They're like, sweet, we fixed it. Now we got to go back to 1955 to, well, or something or other. And they're like, but what about Jennifer and Aini? We left them wherever. And he's like, no, once we fix the timeline, they will merge with their other timeline self. He says something like,
he says the timeline will change around them. And they all just think it's a
dream.
That's
bullshit. They fucking die. They would fucking die.
They don't necessarily... Well, they die at some point, but Yeah, I mean, like, I guess whether, I mean, because they, although they do say, yeah, like, the timeline has been erased. It's not just like, oh, we've set the dial back to our 1985. It's that one ceases to exist. But then we are also shown things changing around people. Like, because like the universe
photos,
is...
The photos change and stuff.
Yeah, but like the films focus, deal a lot with like the butterfly effect and stuff like that. But there's so many like small changes that have no effect that it's like, no, this would be a big deal.
I just think if I was Marty, I'd be like, Doc, we have to go get my fucking girlfriend who's
and
like asleep on the porch or whatever. Because yeah, this is not... like, we don't know enough. And it's highly likely that they'll be... you know, they'll be
taken, yeah. Well, like, it literally is, we don't know enough about this.
Yeah. I've got one, well, actually, another thing that struck me as well is that when Marty goes back to 1885 and says goodbye to 1955 Doc in part three, that's the last 1955 Doc hears about anything. Like, he's not in the story after that. So it's like, he just sends him off and he's like, well, I guess I'll find out if he saved me in
30 years. I do, that struck me watching it as well, that it's like, this guy just has the craziest week of his life and then doesn't get to find out the content.
Life.
Yeah, doesn't get to find out anything else about it for so long.
Yeah, and I do like that, though, that we've got these sort of these two central characters in the series, but I feel like... it's still Marty's story because we get several different versions of Doc Brown, and well, we get two versions of Doc Brown that I think that makes that's cool that we see him at different time eras. I wonder if Christopher Lloyd like played them differently, or you know what I mean? Like, does he play 1985 Doc Brown with the wisdom of a man who's 30 years old?
Yeah. Well, one thing that's like a little, you know, like, fuck you to the audience, is that I never got as a kid. It wasn't until maybe when we watched it last time that I understood why this is in there, is that when they get to 2015 in the second film, and Doc's already been there at this point, he says, oh, Marty, by the way, I hope this disguise didn't freak you out. I went to this facial rejuvenation clinic and got some work done, and he peels
added
this
years
mask
to my life.
He peels this mask off his face. That's like, and but I always thought as a kid the joke was there's absolutely no change. and but the thing is that it's like, well, in the original film, 1955 Doc is the real Christopher Lloyd, and then 1955, and then 1985. Has old man makeup on, but it's so subtle because he's already an old man that they were like, well, fuck, we're going to be with 1985 Doc for the next two movies. How can we get around having to do the makeup all the time? So they just have him peel it off and hang a lampshade on it. And yeah, I just never understood why that was there.
The last thing I want to comment on, and you know, this has been a bit of a different episode from our usual stuff. And I wanted to say that, when Marty's like, if I go back to 1885 into that wall, I'll crash into those Indians because there's a bunch of Native Americans painted on the mural. And Doc says, no, Marty, you're not thinking fourth dimensionally. When you go through there, they won't even be there. And they are there, and it's a big joke. Marty saying that in the first place is such a fucking stupid ass thing. Are you stupid? Are you stupid?
Yeah.
You think that a painting of Indians, sorry, Native Americans, will mean that you'll crash into them? I don't know. It just struck me this time. I was like, what a dumb
also
thing to
the,
say.
When he arrives and there's the shot of the Native Americans coming towards him, one of the worst edited sequences I've ever seen. In terms of like the continuity, it is like they overtake him, and then in the shot after that, he is, you know, 100 meters in front of them, and then the next shot, they almost at the DeLorean. It's so bad, like, yeah, it's so distracting. But yeah, when he says you're not thinking fourth dimensionally later on in the film, when he goes talking about, oh, we don't, you know, we're gonna crash because there's no train tracks there, and he goes, oh, you're not thinking fourth dimensionally. He goes, right, I've got a real problem with that. It's such a funny delivery. But what's your favorite like little idiosyncrasy from the films?
Well,
like,
I don't have a
real specific thing that you just remember.
I don't know if it's my favorite, but I remember it being the most recent one I noticed because I noticed it when we covered it last time, and I'd never noticed it before, was that when at the end of the first film, when Marty's like, hey, my dad punched out Biff. He's never stood up to him in his life. And Doc's like, never? And he's like, nah. And he's like, huh. And I never noticed that till my last rewatch, that's signposting the fact that the now 1985 will have changed so that, you know, Biff is emasculated and George is the man, basically.
Yeah. There is also the classic thing of, like, Marty is going back to a future filled with people he has never met.
Yeah. It'd be a nightmare. I wouldn't want
that. The ending of Back to the Future is secretly terrifying.
It's true. Maybe it wouldn't be that bad. Maybe it'd be fine.
There's a lot of, like, really strange characters in the film. Like the guy who owns the wild gunman in the Old West. An insane performance from that man. Like, just the real, like, car salesman conman kind of character, but very fun. I love when he's like, ha, frisbee pies, check it out. And then they're just like, yeah, that's the brand of the pies. I don't get why he said that.
Yeah. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, so much. Let's redux it again next year. What's your favorite stuff you may have missed in the film? Things like the Lone Pine, Twin Pine Mall.
Oh, that was going to be my example.
There's a few that are a lot more subtle. Like, you mentioned the Statler's automobiles, and then there's, like, a Statler's stables in the Old West. The Goldie Wilson.
Well, the one I've noticed since I was a little boy was that D. Jones's manure is A. Jones's manure in 1985.
Yeah. It's almost like it's very cartoony, a lot of the stuff. Like, all the stuff about, oh, it's played by Leah Thompson, so, you know, they're an incestuous family. And it's like, it's cartoon logic. Like,
I actually think that's more a symptom of Crispin Glover not being game. I feel like I feel like Seamus McFly probably would have been played by Crispin Glover if he was still around, maybe. Yeah. Or maybe not. I don't know. But I do kind of think it's a weird decision to have Lorraine playing.
Because the thing as well is that, like, Lorraine and Jennifer look very similar.
Yeah. And I think it's supposed to be, like, I've read before that people are like, oh, it's just that McFly men have the same taste in women. And, you know, it would be even weirder if there's just this random woman played by a new actress, you know, like that wouldn't really work with the sort of language of the trilogy, I guess. So I think this has been a good discussion, Richard. I think this has been, you know, we said maybe this isn't a sequel, but maybe it is a sequel to the first one where we were relentlessly positive. I feel like I'm at a point in my life where I can start taking a more critical look at the series, I think.
Yeah, I was thinking that, like, while watching it, because you'd sort of been like, you know what? I don't even like it that much anymore. I'm the Biff of the podcast. I was having a bit of the same sort of, like, you know, I'm still, this is always going to be a franchise very near and dear to me. And I feel like I watched it with a slightly different eye, but not enough to really dampen my experience of any of the films.
I mean, I'll still, if I ever have kids, show them Back to the Future. But it's more like, I don't know.
How do you guys feel about your mum now after watching that?
I think I just feel like I've seen it too many times now. And I feel like it's a movie that rewards you in picking out all these Easter eggs. And maybe I've just picked them all out. And
well,
like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like we said, that, like, yeah, not rewatching like comfort films and stuff as much anymore. I have a lot of comfort TV shows, and I feel like my attention span got shot during COVID. And I was talking about this with gaming, that, like, all through COVID, the big lockdown we had in 2021, I just spent my time playing Dead by Daylight and Fall Guys, which are both just like round-based things. And so now anytime a game is like, here's a little bit of plot, I'm like, I don't fucking care. Like, just give me to the gameplay, and I just want the same repetitive gameplay. And so that's a real struggle for me. But the... I think, yeah, so I can rewatch TV shows and have comfort TV shows, but even then, less so these days. But that I... Yeah, movies, it's just, there's always so much to watch. Especially now that I fucking review movies for my job, and there's always something to watch for this podcast, that it's like, when am I going to have the time to just pop on Back to the Future?
Jesus Christ. So, geez Louise, the podcast has ruined Back to the Future for us.
Well, it's not that it's ruined it's just I just don't have the time to revisit it. It's like, it's always going to be near and dear to my heart. I just, you know.
Well, Richard, it's not all over yet, because we do have to continue the franchise, which is, of course, our little segment we do where we pitch our own continuations of the franchise. There are, of course, a few continuations that already exist, including the previously mentioned Back to the Future animated series, which sucks. Don't watch it.
Well, another thing, like, we talked about how, you know, you always forget that, like, Chicken isn't in the first film and, like, all these other reoccurring elements. You forget that Doc's classic catchphrase, Oucher McGoucher, doesn't actually appear in the films.
It's an animated series exclusive, yeah. There's also a musical theatre production in 2020.
Which I might go to. It's on the West End when I'm in London, so.
Nice. Might check you it should.
Out. Doc Brown, the role of Doc Brown was originated by Roger Bart, who was Hercules' singing voice, and he sings Go the Distance.
He plays Doc Brown.
Yeah, he also originated the role of Hades in the Hercules musical. Or he played it at some point.
That's what a insular career. So the other big thing is with the 35th anniversary release, a short film was made in 2015. Called Doc Brown Saves the World, which I think it's like 5 minutes long, and it's basically just explaining why 2015 doesn't look like how it does in the future. And it's something about Doc prevents the invention of the hoverboard, because that leads to a nuclear holocaust in 2045, and so hover technology, which rules the world in 2015, basically is pushed back,
because that was a big thing that, like, at the time they were like, yeah, we managed to get hoverboards, and the people were like, whoa, and then it was like, ah, oh, we were just pranking you. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff around 2015. I remember the Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd appeared on Jimmy Kimmel in character, and it was the most depressing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was. I'm shocked both of them are still alive to this day.
I mean, Christopher Lloyd is, I mean, because as far as I'm concerned, he was a decrepit old man in 1985. My perception of people's ages has changed a little bit since then, or since I was a kid. But then, yeah, and obviously Michael J. Fox with his health issues. And it's like, I mean, you and I saw Christopher Lloyd in what would it be, 2017, 2018. And
He dabbed.
And it was just sad. Like, and also people weren't being very kind.
Well, the dabbing wasn't the sad part. That
the dabbing was the best part. But yeah, like, people were like, oh, in this one episode of Taxi, how many takes did this thing take? And he's like, I'm sorry, I don't remember that. Like, no, it was the bit where you did this. And it's like, just be like, what was it like filming Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and let him tell the story he's rehearsed.
Yeah. He's an old man, though he is still acting in things. He was in an episode of The Mandalorian. He was cast in something recently.
There's that Looney Tunes show that, like,
that's never coming out.
Never come out. Yeah, what was he cast in recently?
And he's in Mr. Nobody or Nobody or whatever it's called.
Like, yeah. Good for him. But there's a couple other. There's the comics as well, which I've read half of.
Yes.
There's
the video game.
Which it's not on the PlayStation Store anymore. I know you have a copy of it. I was wondering if
I've played a bit of it, and it has a really good impetus. Like, the plot I thought was real fun, because it's not a bad way to continue the story forward. And I quite liked initially that it starts with basically recreating the first time machine experiment, and then Einstein doesn't come back after a minute, And it's a multiple choice, like, point and click game.
It's a Telltale, yeah.
Yeah, and so you're clicking the lines that you remember from the movie. And when Einstein doesn't come back, one of the options is, this isn't how it happened.
Oof.
And I always thought that was really cool. Oof. And then once you say that, it's like a dream and he wakes up in 1986. So it takes place in 1986, which is feels like, whoa, we've moved beyond the veil.
Multiples,
you know?
Of 30, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the downs, I never finished it because it does just end up becoming like, what if you could play this part from the movie? Right. You know, it has some original parts.
Which is the plot of Ready Player One, or it's a part of the plot of Ready Player One.
Yeah, yeah. I think the Ghostbusters PS3 game is the same thing as well. It's like part sequel, part replay, famous parts from the movie. And I think it becomes about stopping Doc Brown from becoming evil, basically. I think that's ultimately what the plot is. I never played the last chapter. It got too boring. But it's got some cool ideas in it.
But yeah, it's not available anymore. So if you've got a copy, hold on to it. Unless you want to let me borrow it, because I want to play it.
Okay.
But then as soon as it starts to change,
first
some
I've
plot,
heard you've wanted to play it.
First, as soon as like it tells me some plot, I'll be like, fuck off. I downloaded the new Monkey Island game, and I was like, oh, don't
care. So famously as well, like, you know, everyone involved is pretty anti ever making more. Bob Gale, the writer, has said there will never be a fourth film. Says it would be like selling your kids into prostitution or sex work. I apologize for the antiquated language on Gale's part there. And of course, Michael J. Fox having Parkinson's disease would be quite a specific character trait to sort of become, you know, part of Marty McFly as a character.
Yeah, he's retired from acting now as well, except for he had a little cameo in See You Yesterday, which was fun seeing him in. But the film,
oh, nice.
Not that great.
Damn.
But it's time trip.
My continue the franchise, Richard, it's pretty simple. I think I understand the sacred place that this series has, but like everyone I think is getting to the point where they're just like, I kind of want to see what this would look like in if it was, you know, today instead of 1985. And I don't know, I think that's a worthy experiment to explore.
Yeah.
Like, take it seriously. Take it. Don't do any cheap shots. Maybe don't even call it Back to the Future. I don't know. Like, a completely new cast and even a different story, but like keep the same basic ideas in there. And I don't know. I just think we're potentially ready to see that. Like, you could do something real fun with it. And I think people have been so like resistant to embrace that idea, but I don't know. I think we will see a Back to the Future spiritual successor in our lifetimes.
Yeah. I think like, similar to the way, cause my continue the franchise is let's just fucking remake it. Like, I think this is my continue the franchise last time as well. But it's like, there should be every 10 years, there should be a Back to the Future.
Sure, yeah.
And it's like, it's a movie designed to be fucking anachronistic. That it's like, and that you should have every year, every 10 years, have like such specific to that time period and the time period of 30 years ago. That it's like, I get it's a sacred cow, but I'm a big sort of supporter of like remaking something or doing a bad sequel does not ruin the original film. Like, you still have it. I get it can ruin the legacy, yada yada, but it's like no one's taking away the first film except for like George Lucas did with Star Wars and stuff, so it does happen. But but yeah, I mean, there's Tom Holland. Like, there was apparently he was approached about appearing in some kind of remake or reboot, and I think he, we've talked about this before, but it's like, he based his entire personality on Michael J. Fox and Marty McFly, really. And it's like, he probably would be a pretty fucking great, I mean, maybe he's getting a bit old for it now, but be a pretty great Marty McFly. But it's the perfect franchise to be modernized and couldn't agree more.
A small update from the last time we covered it, because in 2018, a poll by The Hollywood Reporter said that 71% of the people they interviewed wanted a Back to the Future sequel. ahead of Toy Story or Indiana Jones, two franchises which have had sequels since then.
Yeah, I was curious to have a conversation about this because, like, how many of the, like, 80s sacred cows, like these films that cannot be remade, are there actually left that don't have any? Like, I mean, Back to the Future has sequels,
but they were made at the time.
How many like standalone perfect 80s films are there that have never been retouched?
It's just this and Ferris Bueller, dude. Everything
Ferris Bueller has a distant sequel coming up.
That's true.
Back to the Future had two, but like, yeah, a single. I mean, Breakfast Club.
Yeah, but Breakfast Club isn't very franchisable. Yeah. I don't know what you would do with that. But yeah, no, totally. It's a good question.
Yeah. Well, are you not gonna? I was hoping you would bring up your original continued franchise for this film.
I was hoping you would forget it and that you wouldn't bring it up.
Wow. Why is that?
Because I felt very silly when I pitched it all those years ago. I still think it's a good idea. I just didn't pitch it very well.
It was to do a TV series in the same sort of vein as Fargo is to the TV series to the movie. And
yeah. Like, keep the DNA, but change all the characters, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
And start off with a teacher marking something and go, great, Scott.
I still think that's a good idea. The problem wasn't that it was a bad idea. The problem was that was all I came to the table with.
But yeah, the... In the third film, where Marty says, great, Scott, and Doc says, I know, this is heavy. When I saw that as a kid, holy fuck, that was the funniest thing. I think it's when my testicles dropped.
Wow. You telling me? He said. Cool. Well, I mean, do we re-rank the franchise?
Where is it now?
All right. So if you go over to Letterboxd, the Cult Popular Letterboxd, we've got FFF ranking. Back to the Future is currently ranked 7th behind the Three Colors trilogy and in front of the Mission Impossible series. And I will say this before we discuss re-ranking it at all. I will say, I think Back to the Future is the best franchise where the first film is still the best one.
Clearly the best, yeah.
I think it's the only one I'm willing to like be like, it's still a really good franchise, despite it starting stronger than it ends.
Yeah.
But I think we should drop it. I think
we should raise it.
Okay.
Well, let's call it even. We'll leave it where it is.
Okay.
All right, moving on.
I don't know. I see it in front of Mission Impossible and Scream. I feel like Scream... you're right. We'll leave it. Okay. That brings us to the end of the show. The last thing we've got to do now is a little thing called Franchise Roulette, where we pick our next franchise we're going to watch over the next fortnight, and we do so by drawing a random number, and that correlates to a list. Richard, I reckon it's going to be the Hercules movie, Disney's Hercules, and then the straight-to-TV prequel or midquel, because often the next franchise is one already mentioned, like sort of suspiciously mentioned earlier in the episode, as fate would have it. The Fates would have it, even. And Hercules got brought up two different times this episode.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm thinking. Do you want to give us the number, and then I'll tell people what they can do to support the show? So, if you liked this episode, if you liked this podcast, then please consider supporting it. And you can do that at all the different places. We are, of course, on Twitter and Instagram at CultPopsha, where you can go and follow us. We're on all the other social medias, but who fucking cares about Facebook anymore? We're on Letterboxd, as we mentioned as well, at CultPopsha. You can also join our Discord, which there's a link to in the show notes. I'd highly recommend joining the Discord because that is the beating soul of CultPopsha. That's where you go to... chat to us, to tell us why we're wrong, to tell us why Back to the Future 2 is actually still the best film in the franchise. And if you like us enough, you can actually go on over to patreon.com/ColePopsha, where you can donate any number of money, any number of dollars for various perks and prizes. We've got things like, so for $1, every second franchise, you guys. Every second franchise, you guys get to choose, or you guys get to suggest and vote on what that will be. For $5, you get an extra podcast a month called Film Franchise Follow-Ups, where we revisit an old franchise and look at something else that's not a film or maybe is a new film in that franchise. And you also get early access to the weekly podcasts every month. If you join up to our $10 cult leaders tier, you get another podcast a month called Generic Movie Podcast. Sorry, Generic _ Movie _ Podcast.exe, where we watch a sequel-less film that you guys have suggested and voted on. And then, of course, we also have a $15 tier called Cult Elders, where if you join that, you get to join a little secret Discord server in which you can tell us your thoughts and send us some voice messages. And once a month, we do a Meeting of the Elders episode where we hear your lovely voices and read your lovely thoughts about the franchise. All right, Richard, what is franchise number 6?
All right, would you believe it is a trilogy of films?
No, it's not Hercules.
Starring
the same actor
as the franchise we've just covered.
As in Michael J. Fox?
As in Michael J. Fox.
Richard, are we watching the Teen Wolf trilogy?
No, we're not.
I thought we were going to be watching Teen Wolf, then Teen Wolf 2 starring Jason Bateman, and then the movie they made of the Teen Wolf TV show called Teen Wolf the Movie.
Yeah.
I thought that was what... What is Michael J. Fox in? Atlantis?
No, this is a good franchise to do. I think you're going to be very happy with this.
I don't even remember any other movies he's been in that have sequels.
Yeah, he's in...
Give me... What time are we... What era are we talking?
First one came out the same decade as Back to the Future 3.
I don't know. Just tell me. What is it?
Michael J. Fox. I'll give you this. He stars in the film. He's the titular character. But he doesn't appear on screen.
Oh my God, Richard. Are we watching the Stuart Little trilogy?
We are. Including the seldom seen Stuart Little 3 Call of the Wild.
that sucks. these films are going to suck, but it's high time we covered them. I think Stuart Little
I'm excited for this. Like,
Yeah, totally.
That's great.
Mm. Wow, that's crazy. Like, I was like, oh, we'll get Hercules because we've already, you know, we've already brought up Hercules. But it's like, no, it'll be a lot more blatant than that. All right, everyone, stay tuned for the post-credit scene. Another Patreon reward I actually forgot to bring up. We're just coming at you after this music ends, and we'll see you in the future.
Or the past. No, we'll be the future, actually.
Welcome along to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about in the post-credit scene. Richard, who's it from and what is it?
Well, today's post-credit scene, I know you've just asked me, but let me tell you, I'm just... Today's one comes to us from... Oh, fuck's sake. This thought. Comes from Greg Buckhold, who says, got a post-credit scene question. You talked a bit in the Academy Awards pod about some movies winning awards because they're showing the way forward for films to come. Can you think of any movies that failed on their own merits but are still vital to film history for the things they inspired?
Back to the future. I mean, I guess... I guess things like Batman and Robin, like, sort of that's responsible for probably the deluge of superhero movies we have now. Like, it was so bad that it forced everyone to take superhero movies as a genre more seriously, and now they dominate the world.
That was a direct response. Batman Begins was a direct response, and now it's like everyone wants dark and gritty, you know. Batman Begins and The Dark Knight changed. Also, I mean, like, Austin Powers has been credited with the reason that James Bond is more serious now. But in terms of the things they inspired, I mean, because we're talking about the opposite of that it's like, you know, there must be films that have like a massive leap forward in technology but were actually terrible themselves.
What about recreating a young Professor X in X-Men 3 is now like the de-aging technology is massive in Hollywood now. That's another reason actually why I thought Back to the Future needs to get remade, is because de-aging is what would happen these days.
Well, I did think about that it's like you would for Doc and stuff and like Lorraine and think you would still cast, I guess, is de-aging more of a thing than making people look older? I feel like it's just makeup has gotten better, so you would still cast younger actors rather than de-age older ones.
Be the cheaper way to do it. Yeah.